So my father-in-law had a company, and when COVID hit, the football thing, really the whole world kind of shut down, and especially like non-essential things, and college football was one of those things that not really essential. People didn't really understand or know what was going to happen or what was going on, but the construction world was still going.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Nailed It. I'm your host, Brandon Jensen, and today's guest is Joey Wilmore, one of the best in the flooring industry. But his path to success didn't start in showrooms or job sites, it started on the football field. Right out of college, Joey began coaching under Jay Hill, one of the greatest defensive minds in the game. But eventually, he made the jump into the flooring business, bringing the same discipline and strategy that made him a great coach. Now he's an industry leader, known for his expertise, connections, and ability to get the job done right. Oh, and he still finds time to coach high school football. This one's got hustle, leadership, and some great stories. Let's dive in. This is Nailed It. So Joey, tell us a little bit about your kind of just a little background. You grew up here, you went to high school, you went to college. I know that you've done some, you know, you talked about coaching just briefly. You did some refereeing at, you know, like a pretty high level.
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely. So originally from Sandy.
Okay.
Went to high school here.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Brighton High School.
Okay, nice. What year did you graduate?
Graduated 06.
06. Okay, I'm trying to remember. I'm a little bit older than you. So I'm trying to remember if I know anybody that went to Brighton. But most of them, I think, were all older. But
did you go to Murray?
Yeah. Yep.
When?
99.
So
like 7 years before you.
Would you potentially know Casey Cetera, who went to Murray?
That name sounds pretty familiar.
He probably would have been, like a sophomore or freshman in 99, because he's 4 years older than me, so I think he was 02.
Okay. The name sounds familiar, but I can't put a face to the name. So, yeah, I'm just past that. Like, that was how my brother and I were. We were 3 years apart, but he was out of high school when I was going into high school, right?
Yeah.
So, teachers kind of knew, picked up on that we were siblings, but we didn't look anything alike, right?
Yeah.
My brother was, you know, shaving in ninth grade, and I was, still waiting for my growth spurt in ninth grade or getting my growth spurt. I can't remember the exact, my mom knows better than I do, but, and he takes, you know, on more my dad's side of the family. I take on more my mom. So we don't really look alike, but my mom picked up when she went to like parent teacher conference, and they were like, isn't it just interesting how different two boys can be in the same household? And my mom was like, oh, you do know that, like, Chris is, you know, Brandon's brother, or Brandon is Chris's brother. So, okay. So you went to Brighton, graduated in 06.
From there, went to the University of Utah.
Okay.
Worked with the football team. It was an awesome experience. Met a lot of great people doing that. Kind of really, I'd say, fostered my love for coaching and in the game. I always loved football when I was 8 years old. My friends had all signed up for football. My parents didn't know anything about it. I got the flyer and I came home and I was like, I want to play football. I'm like, okay, we'll do it. And so it's always been just
a part.
I'd say like
young.
The true love of my life would be football. And so working with the football team at the University of Utah was great. Finished
and
up.
And you
from
were
there.
On the coaching staff. Or
I was an assistant to Jay Bulware, who was the tight ends coach, and then also Aaron Alfred, the late Aaron Alfred. He passed away a few years ago.
Do you know Jake Jackson?
Jake Jackson.
He played tight end, I think. I can't remember when he was there, but anyway, it just was curious. He's a buddy, and he played there for a few years, but I can't remember the dates that he played, but. I'll have to find out.
Yeah, find out, because I'm sure if he was around that 2000 to 2005 timeline, then our coaching staff now, most of our coaching staff played at the University of Utah. So they'd know him.
Oh yeah.
So we have a connection there somewhere.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you did that for a few years.
Yep. From there I started coaching high school football and high school lacrosse. Loved that. And then, I got an opportunity with Jay Hill at Weber State and went up and coached with him, and that's pretty cool. It was amazing.
I mean, he kind of turned that program around.
Oh, absolutely.
And, sidebar here, he actually lived in my folks' neighborhood, and
that's right, he did.
Yeah, he lived here in Murray, and so we got to know him pretty well, and his wife, and you know, I mean, she went through cancer, and that was like, you know, pretty, you know, brought I'm sure the team close together and everything. And,
oh yeah, there was a long time there. It was Sarah Strong, like yeah. We went around her. She was a fighter. Sarah's a sweetheart.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Love Sarah.
Their whole family. But I remember he's got his son when they lived in my folks' neighborhood in church. That dude was like climbing over the pews and like underneath the pew. I mean, he was just a little rascal, man. They couldn't control that guy.
That's funny.
And I'm sure, you know, obviously he grew up. I don't know how. I think he's like, I don't know, in high school by now or out of high school.
Yep. So Jacob will be a senior in high school this coming year.
Okay. Yeah. He was just a little dude when they moved in to my folks' neighborhood.
That was a long time ago.
I
talked to Jay yesterday. So it was good to see him again.
And oh yeah. Nice. How's he doing?
He's doing really well.
And he's doing pretty well down at BYU. I mean, their defense was like, the defense was legit.
Yeah, they were top defense in the Big 12. Like, Jay Hill, I love Jay Hill. Like, that man means more to me than probably anybody will ever know.
So do you think you'll go back into coaching?
I mean, I coach high school football now.
Yeah.
I
should have said back at the collegiate level if the opportunity presented itself.
It would have to be the right opportunity, but I don't think so. Yeah. I think I'm happy with where I'm at with the trajectory of my life, and I'm happy. I like coaching high school football, so I still get that. My little boy, he's gonna start playing flag football this year, and my wife was like, well, he's not playing football if you're not coaching. I was like, okay, so now I'm coaching flag football this spring.
Yeah, well, that's fun. And how old is your son?
He'll be six in a few weeks.
Six. Okay. Yeah, man, that's like, you got to get him in young.
I know.
And it's good for these kids today, because a lot of them, I feel like they kind of have become recluse, right? Because the world is in the palm of their hand, where, you know, when we were growing up, it was like the world was out there, because there was no, you know, mom and dad wouldn't let you watch TV. And
right.
When we were growing up, it was like Nintendo came out when I was like young, mm-hmm. right? Before that, there was like Atari.
Yeah.
And we had Atari, but there was, you know, like, I don't know, two or three games. So you play like the couple games that were available, and then you're like, okay, this is, I'm bored.
Yeah.
Right.
Cause exactly.
I mean, the games were really pretty rudimentary. Right. But how did you get into, so you're kind of doing this coaching thing. How'd you get into flooring and construction?
So my father-in-law had a company, and when COVID hit, the football thing, really the whole world kind of shut down.
Yeah.
And especially like non-essential things, and college football was one of those things that not really essential. People didn't really understand or know what was going to happen or what was going on, but the construction world was still going.
Yeah.
And so
I'm considered essential.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I had told my wife, like, I was never going to talk to her dad about getting into his business. That was something that it just pride on my end. I wasn't going to go to my father-in-law and say, hey, I need a job. So I'd interviewed a bunch of places and had a couple opportunities. And then he came to me with this opportunity of getting into this flooring world. And it felt right to be part of it. And so I jumped in, and it's been awesome. Just understanding construction. Like, my growing up, I was never the the hands-on person in my family. It was, my brother was the one who could fix anything. He could do anything, figure it out. I was always the one that kind of had shoes that matched my belt that looked good with the shirt, you know.
Brown shoes, brown belt.
Exactly.
Brown and black. Now you can. Now brown and black, it's a little more okay now.
I've done the right way. You can do it. But that was just not who I was. And then getting into this and finding out that kind of more that design background of putting things together actually fits in this world really well
and make it look good.
Mm-hmm. And so
we've all seen some homes. I'm sure you've walked through some and you go, oh wow, that's, or even clients are like, oh yeah, that's what you want. And you go, oh, is that really what you want? We had, I'll tell you a story real quick. I first got into construction. It was stucco and stone. Mm-hmm. And there was this color, and if I remember correctly, it was like adobe clay or something. Well, adobe is kind of a pink undertone color, and we kept telling the supply house, guys, get rid of this color, nobody wants that color, because you know you're selecting it off of 12 by 12 swatch, right?
Yeah.
And which is better than a paint swatch, but still, you know, 12 by 12 versus an entire house. Anyway, yeah, I talked to this poor lady and I just said, hey, are you really sure this, you know, it's not really an earth tone. It's going to kind of come out pink. And anyway, you do the whole house. And I mean, she's just in tears because her home is pink, you know, and I'm sitting here in the back of my mind, that's what I tried to tell you. That's what I tried to tell you, but you didn't listen. And we ended up, I think the builder bought the material, we ate the labor, and just, you know, redid, I think, just the front and maybe the sides. We didn't, you know, we weren't going to splurge because they were like out of money, you know, they were over budget. And anyway, but yeah, there's definitely been, I'm sure, times where you just look at it and go, why did they even make this carpet? Why did they even make this? It's so awful.
Right. It's hard. And you get some people that come in and they're like, I want this honey color. You're like, okay, I can find you honey.
Yeah.
Something that's still going to be warm toned. And then it's like, oh, that's like a white carpet with yellow mixed in.
Yeah.
That doesn't look like honey.
No.
But if that's what you want, and it's always hard. And that's where I think kind of understanding colors has really helped me be able to guide people in the right direction of, okay, if that's the carpet you want, then what color are your cabinets, or what color are you going to do your walls? Let's try to find a nice happy medium that if you're dead set on this flooring, are you willing to kind of change a little bit somewhere else to make the colors match? Because the thing is, nobody thinks about flooring. It's kind of an afterthought.
Yeah.
But it can really change a space. The wrong flooring, you can go, oh, this place is terrible. Where before flooring goes in, it's like, oh, this is so beautiful. I'm so excited. And kind of that backdrop, the one really thing that you use the absolute most in new construction is your flooring.
Yeah.
You wake up, you walk on your flooring. Leave your house, walking on your flooring. Design your house based off of your flooring. And so it really ended up being a good segue for me, understanding how that design aspect can work in the flooring world.
Yeah. Because I would say more clients don't have designers than do.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously when there's designers involved, it's pretty straightforward. It's like, hey, Joey, this is what I need. Because the designers have already done it, right?
It's kind of nice.
Yeah. But there are a lot of those clients who, you know, they don't have a designer. They don't, you know, I've done a few remodels at my folks' place, and I end up being the designer. And, cause bless my mom's heart. She can't make a decision on anything, right? She still has no kitchen backsplash cause we never came up with a decision. And now we've kind of talked about like, well, maybe it's time to like refresh the kitchen and do some new countertops. And so, you know, maybe it's beneficial that they've gone, you know, more than a decade without a backsplash. but yeah, I do think, it, you know, and people, if you're good at that, then people can, you know, kind of lean on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of people want to lean on their builders, and I've seen some builders make some really poor choices with, you know, different spec homes that I walk through and go, I understand why this has been sitting for 8 months.
Right. Sometimes it almost gets too custom and just too niche specific.
Yeah.
It's like that's, you're looking for the one in the crowd of 500,000.
Yep.
Instead of let's do something that's going to appeal to 250,000.
Yeah. A bigger scope. Okay. So you get into your father-in-law's company, mm-hmm. right? So you go to work for him. Your flooring, your everything from, you know, LVP, carpet, hardwood, you know, pre-finished, raw. You're kind of like anything flooring, you guys are taking care of it.
Yep, absolutely.
And so you got into this. You got into it during COVID. I want to go back to COVID real quick because I've been in construction basically most of my life. Mm. And, it was kind of, there was this, like you said, people didn't know what was going on. Oh, what's going to go on? And, we had a framing company at the time and, a general contracting company. And we were like, we're just going to go to work until somebody tells us, like, don't come to work.
Yeah.
And then there was all this like, Utah County and Salt Lake County and Wasatch County. And they all had kind of their own little like rules that they were trying to implement. And we basically were like, well, until somebody shows up on the job and tells us to like leave, we're still working. And construction was very much like, a lot of people were not wearing masks. In fact, I would say there was, less than 10% on construction on the job site that were wearing masks.
Oh, I'd be surprised if it was even 10%.
Oh yeah. I would say maybe 3%.
Yeah.
If that, I ended up getting COVID and we had a job that we were getting ready to put in the parade at home. So this is in 2021.
Okay.
And, I actually kind of felt sick. So I put a mask on that day and just kind of kept my distance. Hey, I'm kind of not feeling super great. So just like, kind of keep your distance. And then sure enough, I, had COVID. And so, missed a few days of the job so I didn't infect everybody. But, so going back to the football, they just didn't do a season that year, or did they do a season? There was no crowd. Like, yeah. I can't remember. So explain, tell us kind of what happened with that.
So Weber State is FCS football. So football championship series, where a lot of people know, like the University of Utah, BYU. So they're FBS football bowl series.
Okay.
So those bigger schools, they have their bowl games throughout the year.
Like Division 1 versus Division 2 kind of thing?
They're both still Division 1.
Okay.
So they're both Division 1 football. FCS, just they have a playoff system. So where your record ends up, where you line up in your conference and just the other teams that you've played. So almost like an AP poll, basically, they take these top teams. Every conference champion is automatically put into the playoffs. And so they take these top teams, and then it's a true bracket system, kind of like the playoff, college football playoff that did this year, the 12 team.
Done. Yeah.
The FCS level has been doing that for years and years.
I follow sports. I don't really consider myself like a sports guru, but I mean, I had no idea that's how they did that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it makes it's more entertaining, right? Cause then you get to see ideally the best teams prevail, which is nice.
Yeah. And it's really cool because you end up playing some unique schools from different parts of the country.
Yeah.
As you go through, our second year in 2018 in the national quarterfinals, we played Maine. The Maine Black Bears came to Ogden, Utah to play Weber State. It's like, nice. Who knew that there was a college football team in Maine? And they were big and they were good. Like, unfortunately, Weber State ended up losing that game in the fourth quarter. It was a snowy, cold game.
They probably prevail, because I mean, like Maine is like clear. I mean, I've heard people say like Maine's so far past the East Coast that it should be an hour ahead of the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Like it should have its own time zone because it's like clear out there.
Right. So you look at a map of America and it's like you see the way that Maine like sits in there, like, oh, Maine and Florida are the same, but the way that it, the globe is like, the world it's is round.
Distorted. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. It sits there that, yeah, the furthest west part of Maine is lining up with like the furthest east part of Florida.
Yep.
So it is east and it is north.
And those dudes are like accustomed to the snow, man.
Oh, man. That was a rough game.
So you guys lost that game in 2018. Yeah. But what, so going back to, did they not do a season that year? Or what, remind me kind of what happened.
So they didn't do a spring, or they didn't do a regular season through that year. So 2020, there was nothing. They ended up doing two seasons in 2021. So it was like a shortened spring season that they ended up doing at the FCS level. The FBS level, they had their season in the fall, but it wasn't a regular 12-game season like we're accustomed to now. Okay,
it was like a short season. Mm-hmm. Or
I think the University of Utah, I want to say, only played like 6 or 7 games that year. So they started a little later. They didn't play every game. Another unique thing with that season is if players opted out of not playing, it didn't affect their eligibility. So that was, so
then it lose a year basically.
Mm-hmm. And teams, if they had too many players that had tested positive, they were able to not be punished for missing that game that week. So there were a couple times that it was like, I think the University of Utah had one game or maybe two that going into it, like, like Wednesday or Thursday, it was, oh, we're not going to play this Saturday now because of circumstances that have come up. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, we'll just cancel the game.
Yep. So it was go. It was an interesting time for college football as a whole. I mean, the world as a whole was just flipped upside down.
Yeah.
And that was nice thing being in construction, though. Like you had said, it just kept going. I mean,
yeah,
you talk to any trade and, you know, in the last 20 years, what was the best time of your business? Oh, 2020 and 2021.
Yep. The COVID years.
Yep.
Yeah. Because it was like, I think something that happened is, you know, you've got, let's say you got a studio apartment in downtown Salt Lake, right? Mm-hmm. And, but you leave to go to work. And now all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm working from home. So you basically are like, you wake up, eat, use the bathroom, and work all in the exact same space. And I think people are looking at it going, I need a little more space. Or I need to change my space, or I need to, and there, I mean, we saw just a huge uptick in construction, and then the demand,
yeah,
you know, really caught up. Because one thing I'll give you kind of just a brief history, and I may have told you this before, but like in the 1940s, and don't quote me on these exact numbers, but it was the 1940s, we did like about 9 million single family homes. And the 1940s was World War II. Right, yeah. World War II ended in 45, and I think it was 45, and then in the 50s we did about 20 million single family homes, and then in the 60s 20 million, in the 70s 20 million, in the 80s we did 25, in the 90s we did 25, and in the 2000s we did 27. Well, what happened after? What happened in 2000? Well, 2007, 2008 crash.
Yeah.
And in the 2010s, we did like 5.8 million single family. So you go, you know, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, 20 million each decade. And then you go 25 million for the next 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do 5.8. And that's, by and large, one of the reasons why there is kind of this housing crisis or this housing shortage. And prices are running wild because there's more demand than there is supply. And of course, you know, interest rates have kind of slowed that down a little bit, which I think has been beneficial. But yeah, I think when those rates start to come back down, we're going to be right back to square one. Cause I mean, we haven't had, you know, 20 million homes built.
Yeah.
You know, if you argue we're 20 million homes short, right? You can kind of break it down and get a little more granular with single family and multifamily and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I think basically we're still very short on homes.
One thing that I've noticed is most of the builders that I work with are starting to do the multifamily, doing five plexes, shared wall homes, to really try to pack it in everywhere they can. It almost feels like, and you probably see this more than I do, I kind of see the end of projects, but it's almost like, especially here in the Valley, I want a house with a yard is almost gone. It's, hey, I just need a place to live.
Yep.
Like we're not even talking about a yard anymore. I need some place with a couple rooms, a kitchen and a bathroom.
Yeah.
And if we got shared walls, great. If not, I don't know where I'm going to go.
Cause that's what's, you know, more affordable. And obviously they can build them faster. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the COVID years, we kind of visited about that. Go back into flooring. So now you've been in flooring since, you know, the COVID years, 2020 or whatnot. You've got a number of years under your belt. I know you've got a lot of, you know, a pretty big contractor clientele built up.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see in the flooring industry? I know we've talked a little bit about, you know, there's these, you know, grandma and grandpa started the flooring company. Grandkids don't want to take it over. They're more and more of them are closing doors. There's fewer and fewer. There's less competition. Like, tell us a little bit about kind of what you're seeing. And then I do want to also talk a little bit about, the carpet mill mafia, I'll call it, kind of how the industry,
three heads.
Yeah, how the industry works. Cause it feels like there's these large behemoths that like make everything, and they drive the market, they dictate the market. So kind of walk us through a little bit about what you're seeing with current, you know, suppliers and installers and things like that, and then let's talk about the carpet mafia.
Absolutely. It's been really unique with hard surface is becoming the thing. Talk to some of the other salesmen that we work with. In the 90s and the 2000s, homes were almost exclusively carpet. You had hard surface in your kitchen and your bathrooms, and that's it. Everything else in your house was carpet. My grandmother, who just passed away, we redid her house a little bit, and from the front door to the back door, including two of her bathrooms, carpet everywhere.
Oh, we just demoed one in Holiday, and it was every bathroom carpet. There was like, I think the kitchen had like wood floor or something, but it was literally carpet everywhere. And I'm just looking at that carpet around the toilet going.
So was it mauve or celery green?
I was mauve.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
It's kind of that choice color of the bathroom carpet.
Yeah, hey, this looks really good, and it won't show the urine stains.
Looks nice next to the porcelain too.
Yeah, really nice. As long as it's not the white porcelain, but the what do they call it? Biscuit.
The biscuit yes, toilet. Yes, exactly. That was the package deal back in the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Oh man, I mean, it was definitely gross pulling it out.
I'm sure.
But carpet was kind of, that was all the rave.
Carpet was everything, and kind of that plush, dig your toes into it carpet was everywhere. And then we've really started to just see this trend of, well, I don't want carpet. I'd rather just have rugs or maybe a carpet in a main bedroom or the kids' bedrooms.
Or master closets. We seem like we do a carpet in master closets a lot.
Yeah. And that's kind of where we're at now. And with hard surface, just how many options there are. For a long time, it was sand and finish hardwood, which is solid 3/4 inch thick. It could be anywhere from 1 inch wide to 10 inches wide.
Yeah.
You have options with that. And then it kind of turned into Pergo. Everybody talks about, oh, I have Pergo from early 2000s, which is like that original laminate.
Original kind of click together floor, that floating floor. Yeah.
Yep.
I forgot about Pergo, but yeah,
there was a lot of that. And then laminate, a thicker laminate came out. So like laminate, as you know, is a press board with a laminated top on it. So when people talk about like the strength of a laminate, they usually talk about the AC rating. The AC rating is that finish on top of it, and kind of how dense and how are almost like an acrylic, for like women who get acrylic nails.
Yeah.
That's kind of what that AC
rating is. And that's that millimeter measuring. It'll be like, oh, this is 3.5 millimeter. This is 7 millimeter. This is...
That's usually the overall thickness overall of thickness, the flooring.
Not necessarily that top wear layer.
Yep, so that top press. Wear layer on laminate is AC, but then when it comes to like vinyl or LVP, luxury vinyl planks, you see a 12 mil, a 20 mil, a 22 okay. mil. So that MIL is the finish on the vinyl planks. So okay. different than an AC rating, but still similar, kind of how strong it is, that top coat that's going to okay. help protect it. With a laminate, we're usually thicker. You're anywhere from 3/8 to realistically about 5/8 in thickness.
Okay.
Where you're going to be in there. And then your luxury vinyl plank, that was kind of the cat's meow that came out right around 2020, like COVID years. It was, you know, these thinner SPCs. So there's so many acronyms in the hard surface world. You have AC ratings, mill layer, SPC, WPC. Like it's like, wow, I didn't know I had to have a college degree just to buy just to some hard flooring,
what,
yeah, right?
What laminate I'm doing or what LVP I'm doing.
Exactly. So that's kind of been the big thing now is your LVPs. What am I going to get to my mill wear layer on it? And that's ultimately where you're going to find your strength is your mill with your LVPs. So 12 mil is kind of a normal residential home LVP. 20 mil is going to be a nicer residential light commercial. So something that you could put in an office that has two employees without any foot traffic coming okay. in. And then you have your 30 mil, which is your commercially rated LVP. You can have traffic on that. That's good for your dentist's office, people always walking yeah. on it. So those are kind of the things that people are really putting in their houses. Just, I want a hard surface everywhere, whether it's a laminate or an LVP. Pre-finished wood is another one. So an engineered wood. Yeah. Sometimes I have customers who will come in and say, oh, I need the engineered wood. And so I show them a pre-finished wood. So an engineered wood is like a plywood backing with a wood veneer on top. So it's a real wood floor. It's just not solid.
And wood. Those also come in different wear layers. So you can do like 1/4-inch wear layer, which then enables you to like, you could sand it down mm-hmm. and refinish it at a later point if you got tired of the color or yep, whatnot.
Exactly. So typically if you want to get a screen on it, so usually when people talk about a sand and finish, it's a screen. Mm-hmm. They come in, get that top layer taken off to get a new finish put on. If you're going to do an engineered wood floor, you're probably realistically going to need a 2 millimeter veneer finish on your engineered wood, because that'll take 1 to 1.5 millimeters off to get that new finish put on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the pre-finished wood is one. It's great for Utah's climate. We're the second driest state in the nation. We get really cold. We get really hot. So there's a lot of fluctuation. And that's been something in the flooring world too, is a lot of people see, oh, I want this floor, that floor, like bamboo tends to be one that we get a lot of people asking for bamboo kind of in February, March. I think it's because they probably went on their Hawaiian vacation yeah. and saw bamboo flooring.
Oh yeah, this looks incredible.
This looks so great. This is what I want. It's like, you're going to have a lot of problems with it in Utah, just with how dry it is here. And so an engineered pre-finished wood is great in Utah because it has that stability of the plywood underneath. We're not going to get as much twisting and cupping
movement coming yeah. out of it. Yeah. No, that's a good point. And even you can do, you know, raw mm-hmm. Engineered wood,
yep.
right? Where you still come in, you're still doing kind of the sand and finish. You can get that really custom color. So LVP kind of came about to really give people another, you know, a lower price point mm-hmm. to get the wood floor look and a hard surface, you know, other than sand and finish, because really it was kind of sand and finish, and then these pre-finished hardwoods came out, and these titanium dioxide, this and that. Oh, this is unscratchable, and the, you know, because it's a baked on finish, and it's like we put it in, we cover it, and you know, just the tiniest little thing gets in there, and we're like, I thought this thing was indestructible, and it's like we're replacing half the floor because it's, you know, just hammered by the end of construction, right? Mm-hmm. Where that's where, you know, I do like the sand and finish, because you can come in, you get your stain down, you get your first coat, get everything done, come in and do one final coat, and they can kind of, you know, baby the floor, do a little bit of touch up, yeah, do some minor repairs, and that final coat kind of makes a lot of that go away. But the LVP is also, you know, a great choice, especially at that, you know, lower price point where, mm-hmm, you know, it's not susceptible to water. It's not, or maybe less susceptible, because I know some of them are, but it's a lower price point. It gives people a great look. I mean, some of those look incredible. You know, we put some in a commercial project that you did for us, and I think it's like, wow, this actually looks like really good.
Yeah.
So with that, so that's kind of, you know, that we've gone from carpet to these like more solid surfaces, right? We've gone away from linoleum. We just had a job where he tore a bunch of linoleum out that's been in there for 40 years.
And that's a hard one. Linoleum was around for so long.
Yeah.
It really was. I'd say, I mean, when I first started, I had a couple jobs that we came in and did a sheet vinyl down, but the problem now is there aren't installers who know how to heat weld, because yeah, it's just two pieces that come together. There's no kind of locking system with it. There's very few people in the valley. It's a dying art of knowing how to heat weld these materials next to each other, because if you just glue it down, I mean, any type of moisture gets underneath and it starts to peak up, and yep, and then you get kids and dogs that grab it and pull it, and next
and then that
you know,
lifted edge gets dirty on the edge of it, and then you see that it's lifted, and yeah.
And it's crazy that has become just an absolute dying art.
In over 20 years of construction, we've put in sheet vinyl one time. and they didn't have to seam it or anything, because it was like we got the roll, it was like wide enough,
oh,
it could do the room.
Perfect.
It was like
love
they had
it
to trim it, and I was like, this is beautiful. We don't have to like, and it actually looked really good when it was all done, and it had a good pattern on it, and it was, you know, a lower price point than tile for mm-hmm. sure. But to go, you know, going back to what you said about like, you know, a lost art, we're, you know, one of the things we always kind of talk about is what's happening in the industry. We're not seeing young people enter the industry. There's a lot of these dying arts, yeah, like construction's a dying breed. Everything's moving more towards kind of this streamlined stuff, and where it's kind of, hey, this is really easy. Like for example, installing hardwood floor, I can get install done right away.
Mm-hmm.
But getting the guys to sand and finish, sanding's like the more artistic, or the more, you know, a higher skill level.
A finesse,
yeah,
put into it. Yeah, for
and,
sure.
And, you know, it's harder to get those guys because there's fewer and fewer of them every year. It seems like there's, yeah, fewer and fewer, which I think from a builder standpoint, from a flooring standpoint, you know, you look at it and go, well, let's just sell you this, you know, I'm assuming sell you this pre-finished floor, because like, hey, once that's in, like we're kind of done.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can come back at the finish. We can remove a few boards if they got scratched or damaged or whatnot. And, you know, a lot of those pre-finished, they're making different nosings or for stair tread. I mean, they're basically widening their, you know, the availability of the product offering to, you know, capture a wider, you know, wider range of floors and different things like that. So,
yeah.
But okay. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, you had mentioned you've seen a number of these mom pop carpet, you know, flooring suppliers go out of business, maybe not suppliers, but you know,
yeah, just the retail stores,
yeah,
these different companies that have been around for 30, 40, 50 years that, you know, these families put their blood, sweat and tear into just to make this business and to grow. And it's a great business. It really is. I mean, everybody needs flooring in a house. We can't just go,
yeah,
you know, plywood like sheets down. Like yeah. it needs to be there. And these companies that it's hard work. It is being in the flooring world, especially on the installation side. But there's just so many other things involved with flooring now that, you know, these kids and these grandkids, I don't really want to be involved with a face-to-face communication with somebody, because everything now, like you mentioned earlier, it's just all right here on our phone. Like what am I going to do right here? If I can't do it on my phone, not going to do it. And that too, almost is a lost art, just the art of communication, the art of, you know, creating a relationship with somebody. And we're seeing these stores that have been around forever, their kids, their families don't want them. And I don't want to say a monopoly happening, but there's a couple larger companies that are coming around and they see, you know, oh, this company's been my competition for the last 20 years. Well, they're going out and nobody's going to take over. Well, I'm going to buy the business from them and put my name on and keep it their same location. And just growing into
take all their clientele.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy that's happening.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that we kind of talk about is I feel like construction's a great place to make a good living. Mm-hmm. And if you're willing to work, it could definitely be lucrative. But tell us a little bit, like, I know we've talked loosely and I still can't quite wrap my mind around like all the inner workings, but I remember we were talking about, you know, some of these businesses going out of business and what it would take to, you know, take one over, start a flooring company. And we were, you know, just kind of talking a little bit about that. And you were kind of explaining to me like, okay, so there's these mills, they kind of produce everything. And then there's this one company that like, they're the only company that does the shipping. They're like the gatekeeper. Yeah. They bring it into their warehouse. If you're in bad terms with them, they can kind of give you the middle finger and be like, oh yeah, sorry, you're going to be 3 months for your carpet. Or tell me, kind of walk us through what the flooring mafia looks like, especially on the carpet side, right? Yeah. I don't know if it's that way so much on the solid or hard surfaces, but at least kind of tell us a little bit about the carpet mafia.
Yeah. So there's really only a couple main players. Most people have heard of Shaw carpets, and then there's Mohawk carpet.
I've heard of Mohawk.
Mohawk is unique. They're taking over. Mohawk is now, I don't know if they're the sole owner or at least a part owner of Dow Tile.
Oh,
so Dow Tile is another one that everybody, oh, I know Dow Tile. I see it at Home Depot. I see it at Lowe's. They have commercials. So Mohawk is now part of that. Mohawk has, every company has their own hard surface lines too, and they're acquiring more and more of these lines. There's not so many individual hard surface lines anymore. But anyway, there's Shaw, there's Mohawk, there's Engineered Floors. Engineered Floors is an amazing story. So Shaw Carpets, Grandpa Shaw, he started that from the ground up. He's in his late or mid 90s now. The company, I guess, went public, or board of trustees. Something happened not too long ago, like really only about 8 or 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he was ousted from the company.
His own company.
Shaw Carpets.
Steve Jobs situation.
Right.
But maybe they didn't let him back in.
Well, he was determined that you're going to do this to me. Like the flooring world and the carpet world is what it is because of me. He went down the road, bought a couple hundred acres of land, and he started Engineered Floors. So their carpet division is called Dreamweaver.
Yeah, I've heard of Dreamweaver.
So Dreamweaver, I love the story. It's fascinating. Bob Shaw's whole thing is, well, I'm going to be number one. I'm going to make Dreamweaver the number one carpet in the world. And everything that he's doing is just, we're going to be more innovative. We're going to create new techniques on how to make carpet. We're going to use different materials on carpet. And we're going to be the number one carpet manufacturer in the world. And now he's... I don't know if he's but somewhere between 92 and 96. Depends who you talk to. Some people, oh, he's 96 years old. And other people, yeah. No, he's only 92. So somewhere he's in his 90s, and he goes to work every day to be the number one carpet manufacturer in the world.
And that's why he's still alive, because he has a purpose.
He has a purpose. Yeah. And so it's fun to see this carpet manufacturer, just this happening before our eyes, of really somebody coming in to say, well, no, we're going to create something else that's just as good, if not better. So he's kind of the third big player. There's a couple other players that are pretty big. Excuse me. There's Stanton. Stanton is kind of a higher end, really nice patterns.
We've done quite a bit of Stanton.
Yeah, we do a good amount of Stanton with you, especially in their wools, their hand loomed wools that are beautiful. So that's kind of Stanton's game.
Okay.
Is right in there. A unique thing, there's a handful of other like wool carpet manufacturers or brands, lines that they have their specific things, but Stanton actually produces the carpet for them and sells it exclusively to them, so they can name and market it themselves.
Okay.
So that's kind of a fun thing to know, that you might be dead set on, oh, I want this brand and this. I don't want to go with the big company, Stanton.
Stanton's still making it.
Pretty good chance that Stanton made the carpet.
Yeah.
At least when it comes to the wool world. And then there's Dixie Home. So the Dixie Group, they have a few different lines like Fabrica or Masland. Those are their nicer lines. They have a wool line of 1866 Masland that's really unique with colors and patterns. And Fabrica has their Decor line, which is their higher end wools that look really nice. But Dixie's more of like a traditional company, I would say, of nylons and wools. Okay. And so that's probably another thing with carpet that is almost taboo when people hear the difference between nylon and polyester.
Yeah. So tell us, and I, as a builder, I have a pretty good understanding, but you know, it's kind of like there's nylon or there's polyester. That's kind of like the lowest, mm-hmm. right? And you got nylon, then there's wool blends, and then there's wool. Like, tell us kind of the difference. I know like true wool, it's going to wear better. It's like, but kind of just give us a brief summary of you know, the pros, cons of those three different
options. Absolutely. So like you had mentioned, wool is kind of that top. You go over into Europe and there's castles with wool tapestries and wool runners that have been there for hundreds of years. Like, wool is naturally stain resistant. Wool is going
naturally antimicrobial.
It's green, it's renewable. Like, a sheep is going to shed its wool how many times over its life, in and shear it. So it's sustainable in that aspect. Green, it's at the same time, it is more pricey. It is going to be your highest price point is a wool carpet. Sometimes customers are like, well, why? Why is it so expensive? Well, you're not really buying wool carpet. You're buying a sheep.
Yeah.
And then you're buying somebody's time who
to cut the sheep.
They cut it. They have to string it. They have to create it. They hand loom it to make this wool carpet. So there's a lot of steps to make your wool carpet it is.
And wool has other competitors. More recently, there's a company, Havelock Wool. I think we're going to try and have them on the podcast.
They have
developed wool insulation,
okay.
right? To move away from some of the synthetics and fiberglasses and the foams and the spray foams, the off gas and different things like that. And I mean, genius idea. Right?
Oh, absolutely.
Fire retardant. But anyway, let's go back to, so from there it goes from wool to kind of wool blends and nylons. So what are wool blends? Are they blended with nylon? Are they blended with, what are they blended with?
Sometimes they're blended with nylon. Other times they're blended with a silk.
Okay.
So just depends kind of what level of wool blend you're looking for. And wool blends could be anywhere from 90% silk, 10% wool to 80% nylon, 20% wool. It could be a lot of different things.
So there's a lot of tiers within that bracket.
Mm-hmm. And just knowing like where you sit with that wool carpet. Is it 100% wool or is it a wool blend? Your price point is going to go down a little bit, not crazy down. It's not like, oh, I'm it's looking half the at price. Yeah. Yep. It's still a wool carpet and it's still
and pricey. Price per square foot, kind of just to go back, right? Obviously I know we buy by the yard, but to give, you know, listeners kind of context, price per square foot, we see wools anywhere from about $9, you correct me if I'm wrong, up into the low teens. And I'm sure there's even some that are more expensive than that. So, I mean, yep. You're starting to get some of your wool carpets are as much as hardwoods.
Yep. Yep, yeah, absolutely.
But they do. I mean, they are incredible. They wear better, way better. So after the wool blends, we go to nylon.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the difference between nylon and polyester? Because I don't think, I mean, both of them are synthetic fibers, but I don't think people by and large really have an intimate understanding of how they differ, especially in carpet.
Mm-hmm. So a nylon is typically more almost like a polar bear type fur. It's translucent.
Okay.
And so nylons are typically topically dyed. So almost like the hair on your head. If you dye the hair on your head, you can change it to pretty much any color you want.
Yeah.
But with that, your nylons have dye sites in them. And so a lot of people probably know Scotch Guard.
Right? Yeah.
Coming in, let's put a Scotch Guard on our carpet or a Stain Master on top of our carpet to help protect our nylon carpets because of those dye sites that the carpet has been dyed to make that color, topically dyed. If you think about like a radish or a carrot,
yeah.
Usually a radish, well, always a radish is going to be white on the inside, red on the outside. 90% of nylons are like that. They're topically dyed. Recently, manufacturers have started to be able to create solution dyed nylons. So more so like a carrot. Like
on the spool.
Yep. And so the inside is the color, the outside is the color. So it's all the way through the same color instead of having that topically dyed aspect. That's a newer thing with nylons, where polyesters, that's kind of their main thing is we can make the polyester any color we want.
We want it blue? Blue through yep. and through.
Yeah, exactly.
But polyester doesn't wear as well.
Because
polyester is the lowest price point.
Yes, it is. So I'd say 10, 15 years ago, it was, oh, you don't want a polyester carpet. It's going to track out and it's not going to perform the same way. Manufacturers were making polyester carpets on nylon machines. So just a strand of polyester and a strand of nylon. Nylon's going to be a stronger strand than a polyester. But now these manufacturers are building their own machines to produce polyester carpets that really in the last 5 years, polyester carpet is no longer the low man on the totem pole. Polyester carpets are performing at the same level. They figured out
how to weave it differently or produce it differently so it wears better.
Yep, exactly. I mean, we have polyesters that are outperforming nylons now because of the way that it's actually produced. That technology was kind of spearheaded back to Bob Shaw and Dreamweaver Carpets.
He's so the one. Like, let's figure out how to do this.
Exactly. They can take a less expensive raw material in polyester and create a carpet that is performing higher than a nylon. The nylon world, it really kind of got flipped upside down in COVID with where you could get your nylon from overseas to get it brought in. And so different manufacturers were trying to create their own nylons. The Dixie Group, they have 6/6 nylon. If you ask me what that means, I've had reps explain it to me multiple times, still not sure that I could tell anybody what that means, but it's the type of nylon that they use, that they produce, that they create themselves. That's kind of their thing, like, oh, well, our nylon, we make ourselves and it's higher special. Performing.
Yeah.
Not sure if that's necessarily the case. I mean, nylons do wear fantastic. But if you have the right polyester at the price point, they're doing great. I have a couple commercial customers that they've always done nylon carpets in their commercial spaces. But now with this technology that's coming about with these polyester carpets, there's polyester carpets tiles for commercial spaces that are outperforming nylon carpet tiles.
Oh,
and
crazy.
We're at a lower price point. Now with that too, we don't have the same colors, the same designs. That's another aspect with carpet pricing is how many colors are you being offered? What type of design?
Because the cost associated with being able to produce all of that.
Yep. It's all encompassing. There's a lot of different aspects. It's not so much, oh, this carpet is $2 a square foot. It's a cheap low end carpet. Oh, this carpet is $8 a square foot. It's the greatest thing around.
Yeah.
Well, they're probably going to perform about the same, but do you have as many colors? Do you have as much material? There's a lot of aspects with it. That's why I have customers come in that say, I need a carpet that's priced well, or I need a carpet that's going to wear well, or do I need a polyester? Or do I need a nylon? These are questions that are so loaded. It's like,
well,
let's find out, what do you need out of your carpet? That's probably my favorite question to ask customers is, what are you expecting out of your carpet?
Or what price point do you want to be at? Right. Cause I know like the designers, they always typically will go towards the wool cause they want to use natural materials. Right. Cause your natural stones, your wool carpet, you're like, you know, as they just tend to wear better. Right. I mean, synthetic products are great, but you know, there's a difference between, you know, a marble countertop and a quartz countertop, right? Mm-hmm. In the look and a feel and the wear and it's the same with carpets, right? From the look and the feel and the wear and how it performs. And tell me where, you know, we'll kind of wrap up here, but as you kind of look at the flooring industry, obviously we talked a little bit about a shift away from, you know, carpets. So we're doing more, you know, hard surfaces and we've talked about mom and pop shops closing down and, you know, other larger companies absorbing them, you know, kind of lost trade. Where do you see that going? And how vital do you think it is that we try to get, you know, younger people into, you know, it's like, I was talking to this 19-year-old the other day. He's like, oh yeah, I think I'm going to go sell cars. And I was just like, yeah, but anybody can sell a car. Like, why don't you like go sell something? Cause you know, to me, I come in, I buy a car. Okay. You know, 5 years later, maybe I come back to you, but probably not. Right. Yeah. But like sell something that's, you've got these repeat customers, right?
Yeah.
So find something, which there's tons of sales jobs in construction and construction materials. But anyway, kind of give us a where you think it's going in the next 3, 5, 10 years kind of thing, the flooring industry.
I feel like it is an industry that needs new blood. It's a very aging industry. There are not very many young people. That's most people who come into the shop and they seem like, oh, I was expecting like a 60 to 70 year old, not a 37 year old.
No, that's
and
like
so
true.
It's kind of shocking for them. I want to give a shout out to Home Depot. During college football this year, they had an amazing commercial that talked about like going pro.
Yeah.
And how like these numbers, I talk to my high school kids about it all the time. It's like 1% of high school players go on to play college. And then from college to professional, it's less than 0.5% that even make it to this next level. And this commercial talked about there's, you know, 299 football players that will be going pro this year, but there are 400,000 trade jobs open, so you can go pro in something else.
Yeah.
And that, it's like, wow, that's so true. There are so many just different positions available, different trade jobs, especially in this construction world, that are available. I mean, I'm sure I would venture to say that of your other trades that you use, most of them are over 50.
Oh, they're
like, yeah. You're between your painter, your sheetrocker, everything. They're just older people.
We had like 12 guys on the job site the other day, and the youngest guy was 42.
That's crazy.
Everybody was, you know, mid to late 40s or early 50s. And so you go, okay, well, what does that look like 10 years from now? Okay, well, now everybody's like closing in on 60, mm-hmm. right? And to your point, I mean, you know, as AI is coming in and making things, you know, easier from a technology standpoint. I mean, I look at kind of some of this marketing stuff, and was talking to a friend of mine. And I was like, hey, look at this thing. It'll like, this AI will make a whole website. And he's like, oh yeah. He's like, it's just a matter of time before like those jobs will start to become few and far between, because it's like, well, I can get this AI tool and now I can build 20 websites in a week, where before I build one website in a week, or whatever that time frame is. Well, I can tell you right now, AI's not getting on any roofs anytime soon, and they're not showing up to see this floor that's not leveled, putting down self-leveler, getting the floor prepped, and then coming in and putting the flooring down.
Right.
Like, that's just not...
It's funny happening. You bring that up. This morning, I stopped to pick up or get some gas in my truck, and I look across the parking lot, and I see a kid that I used to coach in high school. I was his high school lacrosse coach.
Okay.
And go over and talk to him, and, hey, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, yeah, lots gone on the last few months, just kind of with the advances in technology. His position has been, he was in the tech world. His position was taken over because of artificial intelligence. I mean, he went to college, got like a degree in computer science or something, and didn't have it. He's savvy. He's a hard worker, and he got things figured out. But he told me, he said, my buddy had a painting company, and he kind of wants to get out of it and start another trade. And so now I've bought his painting company. Like, good for you.
Yeah.
Like, someone whose position was taken away because, like you said, artificial intelligence of just growing this AI world, that now here's this 28-year-old coming back into it saying, well, what am I going to do? Well, not everybody wants to paint their own walls.
No.
And so now he has a painting company. So it's fun to see kind of that transition. And so maybe this AI surge is going to help facilitate.
Push people
like
into much
this,
needed.
This world. I do think it is needed. And like you had said, it can be very lucrative for people, especially if you're willing to get out and grind and have the ability to, one, make connections, two, create relationships, and really help people solve their problems. Because there's so many different aspects to this construction world that, I mean, like me, for instance, I knew nothing about any of this, and now I love it. I think it's great.
Well, I'll tell you, to kind of echo what you were saying, my Finnish guy, right? Great guy. He's been in the country, you know, maybe 10, 12 years. Just bought his fourth home. And the dude, he works. I mean, the dude is just a hard, hard worker. And you can see, and in 10 years' time, it's like he's gotten, you know, himself in a position where he's been able to, you know, build his, you know, I don't know, nest egg, so to speak.
Yeah.
And he's got three homes. And, you know, then you look at, you know, the contrast and you go, oh, okay. You've you're an adult, you're in your mid thirties. You like, what have you done? What, like, you know, there's just, it's that desire to like take advantage of the opportunity.
Yep.
Right. Joey, it's been great to have you on.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And we appreciate you and everything you help us out with from in the flooring world. And we're excited to see where you go in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years and how kind of flooring changes. And hopefully we can get some younger guys into the industry. So I think it could be good.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.